A Taste of Planet Fest, this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome, I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Planet Fest 21 to Mars and back was a huge success. It was our first Planet Fest since the Curiosity rover arrived at Mars in 2012 and the first one to go virtual. What it lacked in big crowds, it more than made up for in enthusiasm and terrific content. I've got a small but exciting sample for you on this week's show, which I'm working on mere hours after the close of Planet Fest on the evening of Sunday, February 14th. You'll hear Emirates Mars Mission Director Amran Sharaf, China space program expert Andrew Jones, and our old friend Andy Weir, author of The Martian. We begin with a few inspiring moments from a NASA media briefing held on Tuesday, February 16th, just 2 days before the Mars 2020 rover Perseverance plunges through its 7 minutes of terror to the surface of the red planet. We told you last week that the United Arab Emirates Hope Orbiter had successfully reached Mars. The current edition of the Downlink, our weekly newsletter, adds the arrival of China's Tianwen-1 orbiter and rover. As you'll hear from Andrew Jones, the rover is not expected to land till May. NASA has announced that Firefly Aerospace will carry PlanetVac to the moon in 2023 on its Blue Ghost lander. NASA also announced that the Europa Clipper will ride a commercial rocket rather than the giant space launch system. Liftoff is now tentatively planned for October 2024. And the European Space Agency is looking for a few good astronauts. The application window opens on March 31st. You can always find more at planetary.org/downlink. Want to join a live conversation about how we will meet the challenges of living elsewhere in the solar system? Humanity in Deep Space is a free virtual event on February 25th at 10:30 a.m. Pacific. I'll join a first-rate panel for what I'm sure will be a fascinating discussion. You can learn more and register at humanityindeepspace.com. NASA has begun the public preparation for the landing of Perseverance. Lead speakers in the first of several media briefings were NASA Associate Administrator for Science Thomas Zurbuchen and Perseverance Deputy Project Manager Jennifer Prosper. Here are a few moments from that briefing.
Well, thanks so much. I'm so excited to join the colleagues here from JPL as we count down to Mars. And we just recognize what an amazing journey this has been. And I want to thank at this time the team for working so hard on this mission, and especially in the past year in adverse circumstances, and really exhibited this true spirit of exploration that we always talk about. I just want to thank them for that. You know, Mars captivates our imagination and has been part of our dreams for many decades. And Perseverance builds on the long history of systematic, science-driven exploration of Mars that has been enabled by ever better technologies and systems. Right now, InSight is taking measurements of Mars quakes. Curiosity is focused on geological and the chemical evolution near Gale Crater. And two orbiters are out there, new in the last couple of weeks, joining other orbits from NASA and other agencies, learning more about this planet. Our journey has been from following the water to seeing whether this planet was habitable, to finding complex chemicals, and now we're at the advent of an entirely new phase, returning samples. An aspirational goal that has been with the science community for decades. Because whether it's on the red planet or here at home on our blue marble, science can bring us together and create solutions to challenges that seem impossible at first. And I'm really looking forward to turning it over to you, Jennifer, who is, of course, the Deputy Project Manager. Take it away, Jennifer.
Thank you. Well, I am so excited to be here today. I can tell you that Perseverance is operating perfectly right now, that all systems are go for landing. Last Friday night, we actually sent a command to the spacecraft. We call it the Do EDL command, Do Entry, Descent, and Landing. It makes it sound simple, It's not simple, but it enters a spacecraft into the timeline where it starts to do the entry, descent, and landing activities. So that was a very exciting event. The spacecraft is focused, the team is focused, and we are all ready to go for landing. I think back to Sojourner, the very first rover we landed on Mars. Sojourner was about the size of a microwave oven, very small, and even though it's our oldest child, they're all kind of like additional children for me. It sort of behaved like a youngest child. It had a very free spirit, and it was just a fun mission to drive around. And then you can see the Spirit and Opportunity rovers were the next evolution. We built off of what Sojourner had done. Spirit and Opportunity actually could talk to Earth all by themselves. They still used solar panels, and they were these twins that explored all over Mars and outlived their lifetime by multiples of 10 and even 100, and they were just great rovers. And then we kind of took a pause and we really upgraded our systems. Curiosity, we went from solar panels to a radioisotope power source. The wheels increased in size. We could traverse over much larger rocks and different terrains. We had a sky crane landing system instead of airbags. We really made a step up. And then Perseverance, even though it looks a lot like Curiosity, is another technological step forward. And so in closing, the one final thing I want to talk about is it's not just about the rovers. And it's not about the individual people who build the rovers. It's about all those individual people together, working together to make this mission work and all of these missions work. There are several dozen of us at JPL who've actually worked on all five of the rover missions, if you can believe it. I want to spend this moment to just thank the team for all of their work over the last almost decade to bring us to where we are today. The team isn't just a bunch of people who are all the same. It's a bunch of different uniquely skilled personnel who know very deeply all the technical things they need to know in order for all those things to come together into a very complex system like the ones that we land on Mars. So thank you to that team. And I will end by saying, both for landing day on Thursday and for the whole surface mission, I wish that team great success that they have worked so hard to obtain over the last many years.
NASA's Thomas Zurbuchen and Perseverance rover Deputy Project Manager Jennifer Prosper in a media briefing on Tuesday, February 16th. PlanetFest 21 included more than 20 virtual sessions covering everything from doing science on Mars to debunking bad science. I hope to share the closing hour with you in a future show. In it, I welcome back Jet Propulsion Lab Chief Engineer Rob Manning, who is always delightful. Actually, my colleagues are working right now on how we will make all of the great session videos available on demand. I'll let you know when this happens. I pre-recorded two PlanetFest sessions, which is why I'm able to share them with you now. We'll hear Andy Weir in a few minutes. First, I'll welcome back to Planetary Radio Emirates Mars Mission Director Amran Sharaf and Planetary Society Contributing Editor Andrew Jones. As you'll hear, we talked less than a day after the EMM Hope spacecraft entered orbit above the Red Planet. Amran, congratulations on behalf of all of us who are watching this, all of us at the Planetary Society, on the successful orbital insertion of Hope.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you very much for your kind introduction and for your kind wishes also. It was an important day in the history of the UAE, also in the history of the region. Feels good to be at this point.
I bet it does, as it should. I was watching last Tuesday when that pandemonium broke out among your team and others there in the UAE and around the world as you got the confirmation that Hope had successfully achieved orbit around the Red Planet. I just want to say there were, the camera was on you periodically. You looked overwhelmed. You look like you maybe somebody should have found you a chair. How did that feel?
A lot of people told me that I did look quite, you know, some people couldn't read me. Some people said that I looked overwhelmed. Some people said that you looked as if you're gonna bring in bad news. Some people were like, it was difficult to understand your facial expressions. To be honest, I was just focused on what needs to be done. The moment I actually did the announcement, I was still in shock actually. I was confident before MOI. I was worried, very worried. I was stressed, at the same time proud, at the same time very confident about the work that the team did. So that moment just hit me quite like as a surprise, you know. And even though I was prepared for it to make an announcement whether it's a success or not, but I saw the 7 years that passed like run in front of me in a second, and it took me a couple of minutes just to realize that this is happening. And maybe that's why, I don't know, to be honest, why I was looking the way I was looking. I guess the good thing is that the news was positive, the news was good, and we've succeeded in reaching Mars.
Tell us, what is the current status of the spacecraft? Is it healthy?
The spacecraft is healthy about 4 hours. So right after insertion, we had a very quick look meeting in which we just make sure that the spacecraft is fine, the subsystems are working fine. 4 hours after that, we had a more detailed discussion about the whole system and subsystems, and also about the trajectory that we entered in with, and also the orbit that we ended up with. And then around 8 a.m. and the next day, which was about 6 hours after that meeting ended, we had that final meeting in which we assessed the orbit that we were in, the capture orbit, and it was is as per our requirements. We also assessed the status of the spacecraft and basically the overall performance of the system and how well it did in the MOI process. We had to make a decision on whether we want to go ahead with a trajectory correction maneuver. The decision was a no-go, which is a good thing. And right after that, we had another meeting to discuss officially transitioning from the Mars orbit insertion phase into the transition phase, basically transitioning to science. So the spacecraft is sound, the spacecraft is fine, it's working well, and we are starting our calibration process for these instruments and very soon, and preparing for us transitioning into our science orbit in 2 months from now, and hopefully less.
So there will be another burn to achieve that science orbit, and yes, that's when we'll start to see the science data that so many of your colleagues on the science team are anticipating?
Yes. So basically, 2 months from now, we should be in our science orbit and we start our science phase. By September this year, we hope to release our science data. No restrictions. And basically, we have a special platform set up for that to give access to everyone around the world to our data.
All very good news. Andrew Jones, you've been very patient through all of this. I hope you found this as interesting as I have. I would love to hear any questions that you might have for Amran as well. But of course, we also want to talk about that other big success last week. Welcome once again.
Thanks. And first, Amran, congratulations. Many congratulations for the success. Also, that fascinating and very rich introduction to the mission and the background. That was wonderful.
Thank you, Andrew.
So as we said, Andrew, not even 24 hours after the arrival of EMM, the HOPE spacecraft from the United Arab Emirates, we saw Tianan-1 arrive in orbit. I'll go to an image because this image in itself is worth talking about. It's an actual image of the spacecraft in flight. How did China achieve this?
This was a bit of a surprise, or quite a surprise, to be honest. I think this was taken in October. Certainly released on October 1st, so it was China's People's Republic of China's National Day. Many millions of kilometers from Earth, they detached a small kind of panel spacecraft which had a camera on both sides. And as it was tumbling away from the spacecraft, it took pictures and sent these to the spacecraft, which were then transferred back home and decoded. So what we got to see in deep space was Tianwen-1 on its way. This was kind of an unprecedented image and quite a stunt, to be honest. Also, especially good to see because for the HOPE mission, we had a countdown. We had the Emirates mission website. We had the insight into the team, which was great to follow. For the Tianwen-1 mission, we didn't really have anything apart from radio silence from China. So we were kind of scrambling around looking for a web stream. There was something from China Central Television, but that was via an app, which you can't, if you're outside of China, you can't even download sometimes, depending on your ecosystem and so on. So it's very hard to know what was going on. But at the same time, we had radio enthusiasts or radio operators who call themselves amateurs, but they are very, very skilled. And what they were doing was using a 20-meter dish in Bochum in Germany to actually pick up the signals. So were able to work out where TN11 was, when we expected the braking burn for the orbit insertion, and then when we could expect it to come back the other side of Mars and pick up the signal. And from the Doppler shifts, we were able to say, okay, look, this looks like, you know, everything's going well. And then a few minutes later, we got the new official news from China that TN11 was in the intended orbit. Yeah, it's been very, very interesting to follow this mission in a number of ways, and not quite so easily or as clearly as others.
What a contrast with what the UAE's openness about the HOPE mission, Amran. I mean, I was on the Chinese news, the Chinese Space Agency's news site yesterday, and more than 24 hours after orbital insertion, there was still not a press release posted on that site. Andrew, we still know a fair amount about this spacecraft. In fact, we can tell quite a bit just from looking at this image. I mean, we're looking at really two spacecraft, right? There is the orbiter, which has now joined so many others in orbit above Mars, including HOPE. But you can see that aeroshell, which I assume has a rover inside it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the orbiter is in its highly elliptical orbit right now. Over the next 2 or 3 months, there will be a lowering of the orbit and observations of an area of Utopia Planitia in preparation for the landing of a rover, which will be about 240 kilograms. So it's kind of comparable to Opportunity in Spirit. So, you know, a serious rover here. This is, of course, China's first interplanetary mission, but also very ambitious, and they have their eyes on some very intriguing science.
Amran, any final thoughts?
I would like to congratulate China for their successful Mars orbit insertion. And also, I would like to wish our colleagues and friends in the U.S. successful arrival of Perseverance next week.
We look forward to getting those science results as HOPE reveals more about the red planet to all of us.
Thank you.
And Andrew, I look forward to talking to you more on Planetary Radio, and especially to reading more about what you are able to learn about the Chinese space program as it continues its ambitious journey out across the solar system. Thanks a lot, and look forward to talking to you.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Andy Weir didn't just write The Martian. He is a certified Mars fanatic, like yours truly. Welcoming Andy back for Planet Fest 21 was a no-brainer. Here's just a portion of our conversation. By the way, Andy will return in April for a conversation about his new and excellent book, Project Hail Mary, available in the first week of May. Andy Weir, welcome to Planet Fest. We are so glad that you're able to join us, and I am so glad to be talking with you again.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to hang out with you, Matt.
Thank you very much. I feel the same way. We're going back to Mars.
Isn't it awesome?
It is. You know, Mark Watney's not making the trip, but, you know, two rovers, two orbiters. It's not bad, right? What do you think about these missions?
Oh, I'm against them. No, obviously, I think they're incredible. It's so awesome. I'm looking forward to what Perseverance is up to. It's got some new tools, some new toys on board that Curiosity didn't have. Really hoping to see how that pans out. Really excited about the landing. I'll be on eggshells watching it.
Super psyched. As we all, man.
Mars is a planet populated entirely by robots.
Yeah, well, till Mark gets there anyway, which I guess is still a little ways off. You follow space exploration and science pretty closely, don't you?
Yeah, of course. Big hobby of mine. Always keeping track of what's going on. It's just something I'm really interested in.
Let's talk about The Martian.
Okay.
Something that made a whole lot more people interested in Mars. And I don't know, I hope NASA has sent you that big check. They should have.
Well, I mean, Random House sent me that big check, so I'm doing fine. Don't worry about it.
That's good. Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath for the NASA one. So I'm going to read this because it's a loaded question. How does it feel to have written Martian science fiction that has earned its place next to Edgar Rice Burroughs, Ray Bradbury, Robert Heinlein, and Kim Stanley Robinson?
That is high praise indeed, and certainly an incredible body of authors to be considered alongside. Feels great. And of course, I think every writer gets this, me especially, just imposter syndrome. Like, what am I doing here? So,
I use that term earned because I and the millions of readers, to say nothing of the tens of millions who saw the movie, You're in that pantheon.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it feels great. I feel like I won the lottery, basically. I just kind of bungled into success and still don't know what I did right. so feels good.
Is there anything now? I mean, it's been a few years since you wrote the book. Is there anything you'd change? Is there anything you would update?
Yeah, people think that, I think the general public at large doesn't realize how rapidly we learn things about Mars. The rovers, the scientific advancements that we're making all the time and learning more and more about Mars. When I was born, people had no idea what Mars even looked like. Mariner hadn't gotten there yet. So they didn't even know it had craters. They thought they had no idea. So just during my lifetime, which is, you know, longer than I'd like to admit, but during my lifetime, we've learned so much about Mars. And since 2012, when I finished The Martian, we've had 9 years, doesn't sound like much, but 9 years of advancements on Mars knowledge. Among many other things we've discovered about Mars since I wrote the book was, first off, there's water all over the damn place. It's just everywhere. So in the book, you know, Mark Watney has to go through all these machinations to turn his leftover rocket fuel into usable water so he can grow his potatoes, when really the soil has every cubic meter of Martian soil has, or it's not soil, it's regolith technically if it's not from Earth, but I'm going to say dirt. Every cubic meter of dirt on Mars has about 35 liters of water trapped as ice crystals in it. So if you filled your refrigerator with Martian dirt and then got all the water out of it by like heating it up till it boiled away and distilling it off, you would have 70 liters of water. That's 35 2-liter bottles full of water. It's an enormous amount of water. There was plenty of water. Mark didn't have to do anything to get at it.
Author and space science fan Andy Weir speaking with me at PlanetFest 21, the Planetary Society's 2-day celebration of Mars and the 3 spacecraft that have joined the robots already exploring the red planet on our behalf. I'll be here with Bruce and What's Up in seconds. Rubber asteroids are back.
Hey, Planetary Radio listeners. The Planetary Society now has an official online store. We've teamed up with Chop Shop, known for their space mission posters, to bring you space-inspired art and merchandise. You can find exclusive Planetary Society t-shirts, posters, and more. Visit planetly.com/spaceshop to learn more. That's planet.ly/spaceshop.
Hi, I'm Jason Davis, Editorial Director for the Planetary Society. Did you know there are more than 20 planetary science missions exploring our solar system? That means a lot of news happens in any given week. Here's how to keep up with it all. The Downlink is our new roundup of planetary exploration headlines. It connects you to the details when you want to dive deeper. From Mercury to interstellar space, we'll catch you up on what you might have missed. That's the Downlink, every Friday at planetary.org.
Time again for What's Up on Planetary Radio. We are joined by the chief scientist of the Planetary Society, who also had a big role in our weekend of Planet Fest to Mars and back. What's up?
You know, it's not up a bunch of planets. Take the time to rest, except for Mars in the evening southwest. South, you can see reddish Mars, but all the other planets, they're chilling. Get psyched, they'll be back in a few weeks. In the meantime, check out Mars and check out the stars. So in the evening sky, we have Mars in the southwest. And if you look to the left, you'll find the reddish star Aldebaran, the brightest star in Taurus. And Aldebaran and Mars are very similar in brightness and color right now, looking like twinsies. And here's the thing, about halfway between them, just kind of a little above the line between the two of them, are the Pleiades star cluster, which look kind of like fuzziness. But if you pull out particularly some binoculars and look in that region, you'll see a cluster of little baby stars in a star nursery. They're so cute. Well, we move on to this week in space history. 1962, John Glenn became the first American to orbit the Earth. And 1996... The NEAR spacecraft launched, headed for the asteroid Eros. We move on to Random's Baseball.
I'll have to wind you up after we're done here.
Matt, Mars, it's there's a lot of stuff there. There are eight working orbiters at Mars right now from seven space agencies.
That really is amazing. That's a flotilla.
It is indeed. So we focus on the coolness of landers. Don't forget the awesome science and coolness of the International Flotilla. We move on to the trivia contest. Our listeners are amazing. They overwhelmed us, particularly on Planet Fest weekend. We were overwhelmed with the number of poems, including epic poems. So sorry, but we need to evaluate longer. And so in a rare move, we're going to put off the announcement of the winners and discussion of the poetry until next week. Does that make sense? Is that what we're doing, Matt?
It absolutely does. Sounds like you were as pleasantly surprised as I was. I was blown away. I didn't expect very many at all. We got over 30 poems or poets out there who submitted their work. Some people more than one of their works. A lot of them are just terrific. This is going to be a difficult choice. But we promise by next week, we will have our five winners, and among them our grand prize winner. The five winners will all get Planet Fest 21 t-shirts. And then we're going to throw in, boy, I can't remember what it was. What for our grand prize winner, I got to look it up. I think it was one of the books we've been talking about recently. So there.
Yeah, it's going to take longer, too, because people put them in Old Norse and ancient Greek and Latin. I mean, I know that's what epic poems are kind of famous for, but it makes it harder to judge.
You know, reading Beowulf is fun, but it's not something I want to do every day.
Oh, actually, I do that every day.
Oh, good. You know who's worse than Grendel, right? Grendel's mom.
Oh, yeah. Not very likable.
No.
Shall I move on to the new trivia question that doesn't involve poetry?
Yeah.
Listen carefully. How many and which space agencies had their first Mars orbiter reach Mars and operate in Mars orbit? How many and which space agencies had their first Mars orbiter, their first Mars orbiter attempt, reach Mars and operate in Mars orbit? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
So all those who got it right on the first try, I get it.
Well, sure, I could have said it that way, but I wanted something more complicated.
Yeah, thank you. You have until the 24th, that's Wednesday, February 24 at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us the answer. We've had so many people asking, when are you going back to giving away rubber asteroids? Well, the time has come. That's what will go to the winner of this new space trivia contest. And yes, Bruce is excited. I think that's it.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up in the night sky, and think about what you would name your Mars spacecraft. Thank you, and good night.
He is Bruce Betts, the chief scientist of the Planetary Society, leading all of our efforts in that range of things that the society is up to, and he also joins us here every week for What's Up. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its members. Mark Hilverde is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. Ad Aries.